stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to this IBM-hosted WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. And now for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Lee Jacobson. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Welcome to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Lee Jacobson, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and within 24 to 48 hours, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site, so you may replay it at your own convenience. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. If you are unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site or by going to any IBM.com site and typing the number 700-6994, that's 700-6994, in the search box in the black section at the very top of the page. You may also instant message the co-moderator, Rex Simmons, by clicking on his email address, simmonre, that's S-I-M-M-O-N-R-E, at us.ibm.com, in the e-meeting attendee list, and he will assist you. Today's presenter is Andrew Hans. Andrew has been a member of the WebSphere Application Server Support Team for 4 years, including the last year as a team lead. He is a graduate of University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where he spent his senior year as a co-op with Tivoli. During his 4 years in customer support, he has worked with multiple high-profile clients on problem resolution and focused on multiple product areas. He has presented at the WebSphere Users Group meeting and at IBM Software University. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server Class Loader Best Practices. It will include a PowerPoint presentation followed by a question and answer session. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, the lines will be open for a question and answer session. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. At this point, I would like to turn the presentation over to Andrew.
Hello, and thank you all for joining. Again, today's presentation is on WebSphere Application Server Class Loader Best Practices. So going ahead and starting, moving on to the next slide, the agenda. So first off, I'm going to talk a little bit about the background of what an actual class loader is, go into the WebSphere class loader hierarchy, what it looks like and what it's comprised of, then moving on to the J2EE structure and why that's so important when dealing with class loaders, the actual WebSphere application class loader settings and how they can be changed and what the effects are. Also, where not to put your common application files. This is a common problem when dealing with class loaders of not placing your files in the correct location. Some pitfalls and how to avoid them from the multiple issues I've seen with different clients. These can definitely help you when you're planning or when you're actually experiencing a problem. And then also just a couple useful links. Okay, next slide. So background, what is a class loader? In short, a class loader is an object responsible for loading classes and resources. The important things to note is that a class or resource is loaded exactly once per class loader instance. And once a class is successfully loaded, the JVM will cache it in a table that associates that resource or class with the class loader that loaded it. That's really important because the JVM not only knows what's loaded, but it also knows what class loader actually did that loading, so it's kind of a one-to-one relationship, so it knows who's been loaded and by whom they were loaded. So also when loading a dependent class, the JVM will invoke the class loader that originally loaded the previous class definition. This is important when you have chained loads, so if one class tries to load another one, we don't kind of start over and start searching from the bottom. We start searching from wherever that first class was found, whatever class loader was found in. Okay, next slide. What is class loader delegation? So every class loader has a delegation mode. And those are parent first and parent last. Sometimes you'll hear different terms, but in WebSphere, this is what we refer to them as. Parent first, the class loader delegates the loading of a class to its parent class loader before attempting to load the class from its local class path. Basically, that means that when a class is to be looked up, instead of looking on the local class path, it's going to delegate up higher and say, well, I'll let my parent try to load that class before I try to actually do it myself. Now, the opposite of that is parent last. Here, the class loader attempts to load the classes from its local class path before delegating the loading to its parent. So if it's not found locally, only then will it delegate to its parent to try to load it. Many times, the parent last setting is used to override classes by the same name at a higher level. So if something exists at a higher level and you have a different version locally, you really have to change that to parent last, so we search locally first. Okay, next slide. So here's a slide that will show you basically all the class loader hierarchy. There's a lot of information here, but I'll start kind of at the top with the yellow box, the JVM class loader. So at the very top of the hierarchy is the JVM class loader. So here is where all the JVM code is loaded. Basically, this is loaded from the JRE lib directory. And whatever's loaded here is defined by the java.ext.dirs. In addition, the JVM class path. So in Webster terms, when you have a class path to an app server, which is the JVM class path, at that level is where the classes will be loaded. So it's at the very top. So next in the hierarchy down, we have the WebSphere Extensions class loader. This class loader loads the WebSphere runtime and its resources. So you can see that that's defined by the ws.ext.dirs. And basically, it loads everything in the /classes directory and /lib and /lib/ext. There are sometimes some additional resource classes, and I'll mention at least one of those later on in the presentation. But just remember that the WebSphere Extensions class loader really loads all the WebSphere runtime and WebSphere library. Next down, we have the WebSphere Lib App class loader. And this is actually defined by the /home/lib/app directory. Now, this was primarily used in v4 and is not recommended now that we're in v5 and v6. However, I know in v5 that it can still be used, but that directory is not actually there. If you do add it, it will show up, but this is really only to be compatible with v4. So what it does is it actually loads all the classes that are in this directory of /home/lib/app. And it does kind of create a break between application class loaders and the actual WebSphere and JVM runtime. So below that is what is more recommended now. It's what we call the WebSphere Server class loader. Here is loaded everything that is part of a server-scoped shared library. So in WebSphere version 5 and beyond, we have something called a shared library, which is the replacement for the lib app. And here you can add classes in this library and associate it with either a server where it would show up here or an application where it would be bundled down below in the next one below that. So this is definitely a good place to load things when you want all of the apps on a certain server to see it. You associate it with that server, it gets loaded here. So below that, we have the purple box that encompasses basically all the WebSphere app class loaders. So this is used to load the application artifacts. These can be varied on the number and exactly what they encompass. Within that, the application module class loader. Normally, this will load your EJBs and RARs and any utility jars that are at the root of your ear file. And it can possibly load your web modules and any files within your web module depending on your class loader settings. And we'll get to those settings later on in the presentation. And lastly, at the bottom is the web module class loader. This will only load things within the web module and may or may not exist depending on your different class loader settings. Now, if you see on the left-hand side, we have something called class search order. Now, this isn't entirely true because it depends on the delegation that we discussed just a second ago, and there's plenty of examples later on in the presentation to explain what I mean. But basically, this is the hierarchy from top to bottom, and we normally will search bottom up. Okay, moving on to the next slide. So the Webster application class loader. So this is basically that bottom box that we just saw on the last screen. It loads the J2E application artifacts that are packaged within your EAR file. These include EJB jars, WAR files, dependency jars, which are normally kind of like utility or common jars, files that don't really fit in either a EJB or WAR, but may need to be used by both. Application scoped shared libraries. Like we discussed, the server scoped gets pulled up into its own class loader. These application scoped shared libraries actually get thrown into the same class loader as the other artifacts within the EAR file. This also includes embedded RAR files. And a WAS application class loader consists of a single application module class loader at the root and zero or more WAR module class loaders. So there may be one WAR class loader, or there may be zero, or there may be multiple, depending on what your settings are. Okay, next slide. So the J2EE structure. J2EE is an application server framework developed by Sun Microsystems for the development and distribution of distributed applications. Webster Application Server implements different versions of the J2EE framework. You can see the different versions for V4, 5, and 6. Okay, next slide. Here's an example of the J2EE 1.3 application packaging. So you can see there's a lot of different artifacts here. The main ones are the EJB module, web module, and possibly client modules or RAR files. But there can be multiple of these in each application. So each EAR file can have zero or more EJBs or zero or more WAR files. And this structure is really important once we start looking at the class loader settings. Next slide, please. So why is this important? It's important to understand as it's really the basis for the class loader structure. So the way these class loaders are set up really can affect the structure of loading of your artifacts within your EAR file. So there's multiple ways to alter the number and functioning of these class loaders, but they're always dependent on that J2EE structure. So if we understand that structure, it can help us really determine how we want the app to be defined or how the structure should be so that we really get the expected behavior we want. Okay, next slide. So configuring these application class loaders. So at the application class loader policy, this applies to how the applications share class loaders or not. So in your console, in a Webster console, if you're at the app server level, so if you choose a server, for instance, server 1, it has a class loader policy of single or multiple. And if you choose single, this means that the EJBs, embedded RARs, and dependent jars for all the EARs are loaded by one class loader, and meaning all of the EAR files on that server. So this is per server basis, per JVM. If it's set to multiple, that means that there's a different class loader for each EAR file. So there's a different application class loader for each EAR file. And that is the default setting. So by default, you will have multiple. And that is kind of the recommended setting. So whether the WAR file or additional zero or more WAR files are loaded by this same class loader is dictated by the WAR class loader policy. So the single and multiple just means do we have one or more class loaders that are going to load our EJBs and RARs. And the WAR setting depends on whatever that's been set to, whether it's loaded also by that or not. Okay, next slide. So the WAR class loader policy can choose how WAR modules are loaded per application. So at the enterprise application level, so when you actually are in the console, move to your applications, and choose the application you're wanting to change, you can choose either application or module. What this means if you have application is that all the web modules within this ear file use the same application class loader. So they're moved up and they share the class loader with all the EJBs. If you have it set to module, which is the default, that means that every WAR uses its own class loader, which is different than the application class loader, and is actually the child of the application class loader. So this can be made at install time and can be changed at any point later. Okay, next slide. Now, each of those two settings we talked about, still they each have a class loader mode. Class loader mode is really just delegation. So whether it's parent first or parent last, it can be chosen for both the WAR class loader and the application class loader. Again, default is parent first. So for all of our class loaders, the default is the parent first setting. Parent last can be chosen, and it, again, tries to find the class within its own class path before delegating to its parent. This will become a little more clear once we get to some examples. Okay, next slide. So here's what it looks like when you have an application class loader policy of single. The application class loader policy of single and WAR policy of application or module. So we have both settings for the WAR being displayed here. So using single, the pro is that each application's EJBs, RARs, and dependent jars can reference other classes and other applications because they're all loaded together. So if you have two ear files on the same server, all of the EJBs and RARs are loaded in one class loader. Now the cons of this are that you cannot start and stop individual apps without affecting the others. So if they depend on each other's jars or code, you stop one, that class will no longer be available. Another thing to consider is this really is not J2E compliant because the base J2E structure expects those EJBs and RARs to be kind of split up. So it really expects the multiple setting. So if you look at the image down here, so underneath the application class loader, the EJBs and RARs, independent jars for all the ears for this server are loaded there. In addition, any web module code that will have the enterprise app setting to application will also be loaded there. So they're all in one class loader. Now, if you go to your WARs and set it to module, then they get pulled down below. And you can see there's a couple down below there. Okay, next slide.
Are you ready for questions, sir?
No, not yet. Just waiting for the next slide to paint up.
Okay,
so here's an example of what the structure looks like when it's application class loader policy set to multiple. When it's set to multiple, you can restart each application without affecting the others because they can't reference each other. Classes within each ear can reference all the classes within the same ear, even if in different modules of that ear file. Cons are that classes within one ear cannot reference classes in another. So with multiple, that means that there's a class loader for each application on that same server. Again, depending on the WAR class loader policy, we'll determine whether there's additional class loaders below that application class loader or not. So in the example on the left-hand side, you'll see that all the ear and WARs are loaded within one class loader. And on the right-hand side, those WARs are pulled down below since the policy is module at that setting. Okay, next slide. So here's an actual example using some possible actual files. So here the setting is single. So we have two apps. App 1 has a module of an EJB1.jar, a WAR file named WAR1.WAR. Now the manifest or class path for that WAR depends on dependency1.jar. and its policy set the application. So if you see the arrow, that application class loader has both EJB1.jar, war1.war, and the dependency jar. So those are all loaded within one. Okay, application 2 has an EJB2.jar, which has a manifest entry depending on dependency2.jar, and war2.war, which the policy is module for this one. So you see that it's pulled down below because it has a setting of module. Now, it can still see all those jars in the app class loader because the app class loader is its parent. Okay, next slide. Okay, here's example 2. Now we've changed the class loader policy to multiple, which means we're going to have a class loader for each ear file, each application. So app 1, we have EJB1.jar, war1.war, and it again has a dependency on dependency1.jar, and the policy here is application. So again, everything is loaded within one, it's just now it's split up from app 2 because we have multiple. So application 2 has EJB2.jar, again a dependency on 2.jar, and its policy is module. So you can see it again is pulled down below, and its parent is the app class loader. So the right-hand two boxes is what the default setting would look like. So each ear file is going to have its own, and by default you're going to have a war file class loader or war class loader for each war file since those are the default settings. Okay, next slide. So now we get into some thoughts about where not to put files. This is a common problem or common question with dealing with applications in class loader selling is where should I put files, and sometimes more importantly is where you should not put files. So do not put files that are needed by your app in the following directories. One of the most important is the JVM ClassPath. This is including the Java Home / JRE directory. This is because if you're on the JVM ClassPath, this includes the App Server JVM ClassPath, is that you're at the very top. You're at the very top of the hierarchy, and anything below you, below that, can see that file. So the JVM class loader is the parent of all other class loaders, and it will have visibility from all the class loaders at a lower level and will actually override some of the WebSphere supplied files. So if you pull a file up that used to be down within WebSphere in its runtime, you pull it up in the JVM, you're likely to have problems because then you're up at a higher level and you've actually overridden some of our files. This is always my first recommendation. Many times this is what I check when there are class loader problems, is take everything off of that JVM class path and really look at where you want to put those files, because there is a better location for them. So, and also, if you place a file here and it needs to look up some file that's at a lower level or a file that may be within your ear file, since it's so high, it can never look down to find those other files. Okay, next slide. Again, do not put files that are needed by your app in the following directories, as any files placed here can interfere with the WebSphere runtime. So this includes the washome / lib directory, the washome / lib / ext directory. Sometimes some custom user registry implementations or some other resources may go here. That's because they are required by the runtime when it starts up. So if you're writing some security custom user registry code, our security component will need to view that implementation, so it has to be at a location you can find it. Also, do not place files at the washome / classes directory. The only thing that should really go here are test patches supplied by support. Test patches work here because it's picked up prior to our normal runtime. The classes directory will be searched first, and if there's something here, it will be chosen prior to that same jar in the runtime. So that's how we test patches. We put them in there and it'll be picked up first. Okay, next slide. So I'm getting to a couple of the pitfalls that I've seen supporting the class loader component. The first one would be too much visibility. This occurs when a class or jar is visible to more files than intended. So an example would be a file named ex1.jar. It's located in a shared library that's associated with multiple app servers, but is only needed by one WAR file running on one server. So we've actually placed this so it's visible by many more things than really need to use it. The danger is that it's visible to so many apps on more than one server, you may add an app later, and it would have visibility to this code as well, which you may not want it to have that visibility. So at a later point, you may add something, and it would be able to see it, and it may cause a problem because you wouldn't expect it to have that visibility to it. So the recommendation would be to place the jar only as high in the hierarchy as needed, and only move higher or associate with more apps or servers only when it really needed. So normally when you may be coding an application, you may have something within the app, or you may end up by default putting that at a very high level in the shared library. So really start lower and only move up as needed. Doing this will reduce the risk of causing problems when more apps are added or configuration changes made at a later point. Okay, next slide. Okay, too little visibility. This occurs when a class or jar is too low in the hierarchy to be visible to all the application code that will need to access it. Example, a file named ex2.jar is located within the root of an ear file. However, a WAR file in another ear, ex_b.ear, also needs to use this jar. So you have two ear files here, and the jar that both of them need is only located within one ear file. So with the normal default settings, that means they don't have visibility to each other. So the ex2.jar will need to be visible to both ex2_a.ear and ex_b.ear. You may think, well, let's just put it in both ear files. That's not recommended because that's now we're putting it in multiple locations, and it's going to be loaded by more than one class loader. Later on, we'll see that it may cause problems when you try to upgrade or have maintenance on that jar. Now it's more than one location. Also, placing it in a shared library associated to the servers these run on also is not recommended, as it can cause the pitfall of too much scope that we just discussed. So if you put it in a shared library and associated with the servers, now it's visible to any app on those servers, not only to the ones that you really want it to be visible to. So the recommendation is to create a shared library to hold this ex2.jar and associate it only with the two apps that need it. And that will eliminate the problem and avoid having too much visibility as well. So again, we can have a shared library, and we can associate that with a server or with an application. So to make things the simplest, we should only associate it with the two apps that really need to use it. And if at a later point, you know, another app is added, it's a very minute change to associate it with a new app. Whereas if you have it associated with a server, all the apps on that server, whether added at a later point or not, will have that visibility. Okay, next slide. Another pitfall is duplicated files. This occurs when a file is in more than one location in a configuration. This is very common to have files that are in multiple places on JVM class paths within multiple ear files. And this may be a result of developers versus deployers or configurators being in separate, you know, locations or not communicating directly with each other to know that they may need a jar, and instead of just knowing it's going to be associated, they will just include it in that ear file or in that app. So an example is multiple ear files contain a jar called ex3.jar. So ex3.jar is in every ear file that needs it. So this will cause this jar to be in the environment many times. So if it's in every ear file and you install five ear files, it's going to be there five times in your environment. And if that jar is large enough, it can actually, you know, cause memory issues or file space issues, and can definitely cause a maintenance issue. For example, if you want to update that jar file, you have to go back and find out every ear file that it's in and make sure it's updated. And instead of just updating at one place, you may have to actually uninstall and reinstall every ear file that you have just to make one change to this jar. So this is an actual classic cause of a class cast exception. So having a class in your environment more than one time can likely cause a class cast exception. So the recommendation would be to pull the ex3.jar from each ear file and place it into a shared library to associate with the applications or servers they run on. So whether it's associated with an app or server kind of depends on your environment. As we kind of just discussed, recommendation would be to each app, so not to have too much visibility. So pulling that out would allow that jar to only be there one time in one location, and if you needed to update it, you would only have to update it one time. You wouldn't have to worry about every ear file or every location that it's at. Okay, next slide. Chain dependencies. This occurs when one jar needs visibility to a second jar, which in turn depends on a third jar. So we have three jars here. The example is A.jar is located within a WAR file, and it depends on B.jar, which is at the root of the ear file, which in turn depends on C.jar, which is in the same WAR file as A. So we have three jars here, A, B, and C. A and C are within the WAR file, but B is up in the ear file. So it's at a different class loader hierarchy level. This, again, is working off the default settings where your modules that are lower than your contents of the root of your ear file, so your EJBs and dependent jars. So this is going to fail since when we are in A.jar and we look for B, we'll be able to find it, no problem, because we looked up to the root of the ear file. So now that we're at the root of the ear file, we need to look for C.jar. Since it's at the root of the WAR, which is at a lower class loader in the hierarchy, it's below it, we cannot look down to find it. So we've already went from WAR class loader up to the ear, the app server class loader, and now we're trying to look back down, and we will likely get a class not found or a no class def found error. This is a very common issue. So the recommendation is to really keep these dependencies in mind and try to place dependent jars in the same class loader unless needed higher in the hierarchy. So the recommendation in this example would actually be to pull the B.jar down within the WAR file itself. There may be some other reason why you wouldn't or could not do that, just because maybe another file would depend on that same B.jar. In that case, you would actually have to move the C.jar up higher so they could be found. But the normal recommendation is try to keep those dependencies kind of all at the same level if they are chained together, because it can cause problems that are difficult to investigate. Okay, next slide. Another common issue is picking up the wrong version of a file. This occurs when multiple versions of the same jar or class are within the configuration, and mistakenly the wrong one is being used. Many of you may be familiar with Xerxes and Xalin or Struts, things that maybe WebSphere uses and you also use it within your app, or you may have a third-party app that uses these things, but you need to use your own version. Example here is a jar named ex5.jar is within an ear file, and a different version of that same class, those same classes, also reside in ex5_a.jar, which is within a shared library associated to the server. So we have the ex5.jar in the ear file, and we also have the ex5_a up at the shared library level, so it's at a higher level. So with the default delegation of parent first, so remember we're always going to delegate to our parent to load something, we're always going to find the ex5_a.jar first. And that's thinking of, say there's a class within the WAR file and it needs that something within that jar. it won't find the EX5.jar within the ear file because that delegation is parent first. It's going to go ahead and look up higher, and the first place it's going to find it is at the shared library level associated with that server. So it's going to pick up EX5_A.jar. So this is a classic cause of linkage errors because when it tries to formulate those class loaders and look up the correct thing, it can't find the correct code that it wants to find. So that will often cause a linkage error. The recommendation here is to carefully set the delegation modes to pick up the appropriate version. Normally, this means switching to parent last. So if we have parent last in this example, if we're in the WAR file, if the setting for that WAR file is parent last, we're going to look in the WAR file first. Well, that jar is not there. So what we'll do next is we'll jump up to our parent, which is the application server class loader, where EX5.jar is, and that's the one we want. So if that delegation is set to parent last, it will look there first. That way, it's not going to ever jump up higher to find the jar, the classes, and it won't find it within that shared library. So we'll find the correct version. Also, a recommendation is to limit the versioning as much as you can. So if you have a version of, say, Xerxes Xalen or Commons Logging, something like that, and you don't really need your own version, say the version that either WebSphere or third party or some other app has is fine for you to use, then go ahead and just use that one. Again, that'll limit the number of times it's in the configuration, will limit confusion during maintenance or upgrading of that specific jar or class. And that's really going to make it a lot easier when you're trying to determine, well, which file am I picking up? Also, do not override a WebSphere-provided jar by placing another version in the JVM class path. This is just a reminder. So if you have something that's within WebSphere, don't put your version up on the JVM class path of that app server because that will, in fact, override the one that WebSphere wants. The one that we're expecting will not be found because our class loader's delegation is also parent first. And remember, the JVM is at the very top of that hierarchy. So it is the last place to go and look for something, but it's really the first place we look because we all delegate up, and that JVM will be the first place we look for some jar. You put something there that WebSphere wants, and we're going to pick it up there before we find the one that we really want that's within our lib or classes directory. Okay, next slide. How to resolve a class not found problem. This, I would say, is the most common error that's seen dealing with class loaders, and it is normally pretty easily resolved also. So if you find yourself seeing one of these errors, so ask yourself the following things. What file can't be found? So normally when you see this error, it pops up in, say, the system out log of your JVM, and it will normally say class not found and give you a file name. You know, what file is that? You know, if it's part of your app, then you should be able to determine, you know, what file exactly that is. And, like, number two, where is that file that you cannot find? So you know the file name. Go ahead and search in your configuration within your jars, within your ear file, and see where it actually is. Now, if it's not anywhere, then obviously that's the reason it can't be found, is that some code wants to find it, and you haven't included it. More often, it's there. It's just that the other file that's looking for it can't find it. So number three, where's the file that is looking for it? So we have two files involved here, the one that's trying to do the lookup and the one that actually can't be found. So as we talked about with the hierarchy, we can't ever look down to find a class. In our hierarchy, we can't look from the JVM, say, down to the application code. So it may just be that the file that's trying to find the other file is at a location too high. It can't find it. It needs to be actually moved down lower or put at the same level. So once you find those two files and you know where they're at, you know, does it have visibility to the file it's trying to load? So file A is trying to load file B, can't find it. Does it actually have visibility to it? Could it find it when you think about the hierarchy? You may even draw out the hierarchy and plug in where those files are and think, well, can I really see this from file A to file B? And you can look and see which class loader is actually attempting to load the class. You know, is it in the JVM or is it part of the gear file? And depending on your settings, is it separated from the other code somehow? Or is it, you know, at a different level? And once you answer all these questions, you normally should be able to correct this type of problem by enabling the visibility to the class that can't be found. And what I mean by enabling visibility may actually mean you have to move that class to a higher level or a lower level. And it may not be the class that actually can't be found need to be moved. It may be the class that's looking for it that needs to be moved. So once you kind of chart that out, it's a lot easier to determine how to correct the problem. Okay, next slide. So here's some useful class loader links. This first link is a best practice for using common application files. This is an article I wrote basically based off V5, but it's still true for V6. It gives step-by-step instructions on how to determine where to put some of these common files that your app may need. And it will let you know how to actually set that up, whether you want to use a shared library. If that's your decision, then it actually walks you through how to set up a shared library. Or if you want to put it within the WAR file and flip your delegation mode to parent last, it will also help you do that. The next link is the IBM Education Assistant. This is an excellent resource. It has some presentations, has some of the images that I used here, some of the examples, and gives you multiple presentations on the WAS class loader. And I found it to be very useful and a very good resource, and has some presentations with speaking notes and with an actual speaker that can walk you through that. Next is the troubleshooting class loader issues document. This is something we wrote here in support to help you troubleshoot some of these problems and hopefully get you, you know, to correct them prior to actually opening a problem record with us or having to call support at all. If you do need to contact support, there is a must-gather that tells you how to do some tracing and logging. That is very helpful when it comes to us to help determine what the problem actually is. Okay, next slide. Okay, this slide includes some links to a number of sites that provide additional resources for WebSphere. The developer work is a very in-depth technical resource. The events link on the support page will point you to webcasts and conference information. Also, WebSphere.org has user group information and additional product information for you. Again, here's a general link to the Education Assistant, which consists of additional self-help modules and really will help a new user get up to learning the product quickly. And it is a very valuable resource. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. Those are our problem records that we work on in support, and that way you can do it electronically versus using voice contact. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products that interest you. So you can get emails that will let you know about new stuff we have coming out, new features, new doc and updates. So that concludes the presentation portion of today.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew. And Millicent, at this point, we would like to open the lines for any questions.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you do wish to signal for a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone phone. Once again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone if you do wish to signal for a question. And if you are using a speakerphone today, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone to signal for any questions. And we'll pause for a moment to allow everyone a chance to signal. Our first question comes from Aaron Webb, Pioneer.
I'd like to hear your comments regarding the shared libraries. You were talking about using a different, if you have multiple jars in different ear files, using a shared library to share it down to multiple applications. And something that we've dealt with here, comments that we've heard is, well, that kind of locks in the developers, because what if different application development teams working on different applications don't want to update the same library? And then the solution that we came up with after that was to create multiple shared libraries with different versions, but then that kind of seems like it's a wasted time, where why wouldn't you just put the jar file in the ear anyways?
Right. So it kind of depends on the exact development deployment environment you have. Using one ear file would probably, or one jar would be best using it in a shared library. But it may not fit your situation if you have multiple ear files that kind of have the same jars and need them. I really would think that coming up with a solution of having one jar that's constantly kept up to date and making sure that if it changes and the other app needs to keep the original version, you at that point could maybe pull it down and put it within the ear file and say, name it, old, jar1_old or something, so that you know that it is really the same code, but since that update, we're not sure that it's going to, use that update successfully, so we want to use the old version. But keeping just one instance would really, be the simplest, I think. Does that help at all?
Yeah, that helps. It just seems, from a management perspective, I'm not exactly sure what all it's buying us. I mean, you mentioned disk space, which, it's really not a big deal. Management is kind of taken care of through the ear deployment, so I'm still not exactly getting a good idea of what it's buying us.
Right, and it may make sense to put it within each ear file, that, each application may be developed by a different team, and they know exactly what they have and what they need, and that you don't mind, those couple of issues of having it in multiple places, because if they update their jar, they're going to update the whole ear file as a whole, so you can keep it as one whole entire piece and not have to worry about using the shared libraries, and that may be a better solution for you.
Okay.
Once again, as a reminder to our audience, that is *1 on your touch-tone phone to signal for any questions. *1 for any questions. And at this time, we have no other questions standing by.
Okay. If we don't have any other questions, at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the IBM WebSphere Technical Exchange site within the next day or two. We hope you will join us for future presentations, where we also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you again to Andrew for presenting.
Thank you for your participation on today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.